Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love. CMF Curo is the country's first Catholic health share ministry to provide an affordable health sharing program rooted in Catholic teaching and community. Learn more at mycatholichealthshare.com. CMF Curo. Healthcare fully alive.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, the Catholic book blogger. With us today, we have Layla Miller. She's a wife, a mother of eight, and a grandmother to several. Though a cradle Catholic, Layla did not discover the fullness of the Catholic faith until young adulthood. She blogged for 8 years at Little Catholic Bubble and has published the book Primal Loss, The Now Adult Children of Divorce Speak, and Raising Chaste Catholic Men. She's been featured on EWTN, National Catholic Register, Catholic Answers Magazine, The Patrick Coffin Show, Crisis Magazine, Catholic World Report, and Relevant Radio, among others. She's a graduate of Boston College and resides in Phoenix with her husband and their children. And today we'll be speaking about her book from Catholic Answers, Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues. Welcome to the show, Layla.
Thank you, Pete. I'm glad to be here.
So the one thing I wanted to touch upon to start off is I'm going to say something I've never said to any other author before, and that is that it's kind of sad that we need to have this book. As you and Trent wrote, were you at all taken aback at how much of a decline our society has gone into?
I am constantly surprised by what's happening. I shouldn't be, but I started parenting 27 years ago. So my oldest is 27, my youngest is 8. And back when I first began parenting, my husband and I, we didn't have to encounter probably half of what's in this book. It's been so rapid, it's such a quick, you know, nosedive of the culture that I just keep thinking, okay, what's next? I mean, I hate to think what's next, but yes, it's been shocking and disheartening, but we have to remember that God chose us to be here at this particular time, so we're going to tackle it.
And your book definitely does give the roadmap for parents to be able to do that. And we're going to walk through the book today, but I just want to start by pulling a quote from chapter one, and that is, "What's worse is your child becoming an adult and not knowing the difference between good and evil," end quote. So how can your book help parents with this?
Well, it does that in a few ways. One way is that we acknowledge, just via the structure of the book, we acknowledge that the parents themselves need catechesis. And I grew up in the 70s and 80s when catechesis was really lacking. And I think that a lot of the problems that parents have today, Catholic parents in training up their children or forming them morally, is that they don't really have the words to say. They don't really understand how it all fits together. So we purposely structured the book so that the first part of each section, so there's 10 different moral issues that we talk about, is a catechesis, a very simple catechesis for the parents to be able to be educated first before they then turn and talk to their children about these issues. But that's foundational, and we have been lacking that for quite a few decades in the church, and it's a huge part of the problem when even the parents can't articulate why something is good or why something is evil. And that had to be addressed in a simple way, which we think we did.
So one of the concepts you cover, it's more than a concept, but you cover natural law, and that can be confusing to people. So why is natural law significant to the book and our conversation today?
Yeah, it is the crux of everything that we write in the book, because we've had, again, this natural law teaching, and let me just define that, the natural law is the universal moral law that is accessible to every human being through the light of reason. So in other words, every culture understands, for example, that stealing is wrong, or killing an innocent person, you know, targeting and killing an innocent person is wrong. Even cutting in line, you know, we all know it, we have a sense of justice, like, oh, somebody just cut me in line. You know, that's we all have a sense of the innate moral law. So that natural law is that. It's like it's what we know, what we can't not know. That's the title of one of my favorite books, by the way. But so the natural law sometimes gets confused because we haven't used it in about 30 years in the church, 30, 40 years. It used to be used all the time to teach the moral law and the truths of our faith. But now it gets confused. People say, well, that's like the laws of nature. No, we're not talking about scientific laws like the law of gravity. Well, then you must be talking about what comes naturally to someone. Well, that's why I'm gay, you know, or something like that. It's like, no, we're not talking about what is a feeling that you have that you naturally want to do. That's not the natural law, or things that come naturally to you in that way. So there are misunderstandings about what the natural law is, but we understand it as looking at a question such as anything. You can take anything. You can say, what is the nature of a thing? What is the nature of a chair or a comb or a needle or a human being or human sexuality or marriage? And you say, okay, we use a thing according to its nature, because if we do that, then the thing, then we have flourishing. Things tend to thrive. And if we use a thing against its nature, things tend to fall apart. Things tend to not go quite so well. So we base everything on this very simple idea that you use a thing according to its nature. And in this case, we're talking about human sexuality.
Yeah, and before we get too deep into conversation, I'd like to mention the layout of your book. You touched upon it a little bit. You cover 10 relevant topics to society today. And each of those, you break it down between what the church teaches, and then you give advice to parents for little kids and big kids. So in saying that, let's look at the first topic covered, and that is sex outside of marriage. Firstly, society has slowly accepted this as the norm over time. And how do we combat that?
So we have to go back to the basic question. What is sex for? What's it for? What's its nature? We used to, at least, this is where it gets tricky, because we used to, even when I was in high school in the 80s, understand that, well, you know, and I went to a big public high school, but, you know, sex is for marriage, because that's, you know, when you make this commitment and then you finally get to kind of, you know, bond with this person in this way that you're not supposed to do elsewhere, and then you have babies that comes out of this particular act. You kind of knew that in the back of your head a couple decades ago. Mm-hmm. Now, we don't even have that concept in our head anymore. We don't know what sex is for. We don't know what marriage is for. So now we just have feelings. You know, well, I feel like doing this, so I'm just going to do this thing because everybody says I should, because it feels good and it's, you know, people like it, and it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything at all. So we have to go back to, again, explaining to the children, and it's not hard. You know, it's not hard to get a child to understand the nature of something if they haven't already been completely corrupted or taught to go just based on feelings. But we have to get them back to those foundations. Like, let's look at what sex is, what it does. You know, what is the nature of the body, and let's see how this all comes together, and what the consequences are if we don't go by what the nature of this thing, you know, requires mm-hmm. that we go by.
You know, one analogy that you and Trent give in a book is not to deface God's temple. And, you know, maybe that's the place to start with, is understanding what the point of the body is. And how do we approach children about this hookup culture? 'Cause, you know, once you send them to public school, and frankly, nowadays, even in parochial schools, you know, they're being exposed to this mentality that it's an act and not anything more than that.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that you bring up the hookup culture and people going to public schools and not being taught correctly. I used to do a lot on my blog with secular kids and teenagers and college kids, And when I say innately that people will, this will resonate, especially again if you start young with your own children, but even out there, I asked one young lady who said, "Joe, there's nothing wrong with the hookup culture in my college, and you know, all the girls are, you know, fine with it. Everybody's good with it." I said, "Okay, great. Can you go back to your friends and call, you know, your girlfriends and ask them, just take a survey. What is there any downside to the hookup culture?" And so she said, "Okay, I'll do that." So she came back and she told me about a few days later. She said, "Yeah, you know what? I surveyed all my girlfriends and they couldn't find a single wrong or bad thing about the hookup culture, except for the constant sobbing." Now, she probably didn't get the irony of that, but I'm thinking, okay, so they're all miserable. Basically, you're misusing human sexuality. They know it on some level because they're sobbing all the time. They're miserable constantly. They're being used. They're using other people. There's consequences such as disease, and I'm sure there were some abortions in there, and they can't figure out why they're so unhappy. So, yeah, it's you know, you just ask kind of some of these probing questions, especially to people who haven't been exposed. You say, "Well, you know, what is the downside? Is there anything?" And she had also told me that again, the nature of who we are as women. She said years later, now she's out in the work world. She said, "Yeah, you know, even my corporate friends and I, we talk all the time about marriage and babies." And I said, "Gosh, can you ever put that out on Facebook and say, gosh, we can't wait to get married and have babies?" She says, "You know, I can't do that." So deep inside every person, we have a core knowledge. We know how we were made or what we were made for. And we may not recognize it until someone points it out or gently brings it to the fore. But yeah, these are questions we have to start asking rather than, "Hey, what do you feel like doing?" That's not really the way to form a person.
Right. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and cover some more topics that you have in the book. And with that, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back to discuss more with Layla Miller about Made This Way from Catholic Answers. We'll be right back.
As master singer-storyteller John Michael Talbot's music became more popular over the years, he began to immerse himself in the teachings of the contemplatives, mystics, and monastic fathers and mothers of the Christian tradition. Talbot eventually began sharing what he's learned between songs during his concerts. Lessons from a Troubadour gathers these parables, stories, and reflections into book form for the first time. Talbot's words open an important window into the understanding of the Catholic faith in holy and ordinary language. Check out Lessons from a Troubadour at AveMariaPress.com or look for it wherever books and ebooks are sold.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. Today we're with Layla Miller. We're talking about her book, Made This Way. And Layla, the next subject I'd like to cover is definitely a difficult topic. It's definitely a hot button issue, and that's the topic of homosexuality and same-sex marriage. We had the landmark Supreme Court decision that sort of changed things for the world. Can you explain to listeners why this, and I'll call it a phenomenon for lack of a better word, is harmful to our society as a whole?
Well, it's it's interesting because I'll sum it up by telling one of the little stories that I tell in the book. My kindergartner a couple years ago was sitting in my kitchen and I was giving him some soup, and he looked up at me and he said, "Mom, you know, girls can marry girls." And he seemed a little tentative. He's kind of looking at me, and I said, "Oh, okay." So I didn't want to have that conversation right then. But knowing that with that age group, you can't get into sexually explicit anything. I mean, we're certainly not supposed to, according to church teaching. We want to keep those years of innocence. We want to keep them as innocent as we can. But I said to him, "Oh, honey, you know, where did you hear that?" And he said his little friend had told him that. And I said, "Oh, you know, she's a really sweet little girl, but she's wrong. And you know, isn't it sad that when a child doesn't have both a mommy and a daddy?" And we always, you know, traditionally think about it, we always used to lament fatherlessness or motherlessness, and now we're saying, "Oh, everything's great, doesn't matter, you know, two mothers, two fathers, one mother, one father, it doesn't matter, everything's great." But when I explained that to him and I said, "You know, isn't that sad, because God made it so that every child should and would begin with a mother and a father, and that's the way, you know, that's best for the child. And isn't it sad when that doesn't happen?" And he immediately understood that. Like, again, there's a recognition of what is good, true, and beautiful. And he said, oh, yeah. And I said, so even if people are very confused, and even if the law were to say something that were contrary to that, you know, we know that it's right and true that, that you know, a married mom and dad have a family so that each kid can have a mom and dad. So we go into, you know, can blow that up societally and say, okay, wait a second. You're not just saying that now sex can be used in ways that aren't even procreative, aren't even unitive, you know, don't even, there's now no consummation required, just kind of mutual self-stimulation, and we're going to call that something holy or something good for society, and we're even going to try to call that marriage. But then on the on top of that, then we're saying, well, not only are we going to try to call that marriage, but we're going to say that kids can, you know, that are perfectly fine in these types of quote-unquote marriages. And so we know that society, the basis of all society is the family and how stable it is and how children thrive is by having that complementarity of a mother and a father. And all the study, all the social science studies prove this, and everybody, you know, in their hearts and society for human society for all of mankind has known this. But now we're just going to throw it out in one generation, not even a generation, in like, I don't know, 5 years, 10 years, we decided we're going to throw all of that out and start with something completely different.
Mm-hmm.
It's there's no stability there. There's no truth there. All of this is some frantic social experiment, and we can't do this to our children. We're kind of watching all around us and seeing this explode around us in not so good ways. So it's very harmful, and kids, especially as they get into junior high and high school, they can see what it's doing. They can see that their friends and their peers are not stable. They're not happy. There's a lot of acting out. There's a lot of bad stuff going on, worse than ever. So we can show that when things aren't used according to their nature, that things do tend to fall apart. And that's what's happening now with marriage and the whole homosexual culture.
Mm-hmm. And to me, this is one of the most difficult topics to broach with children, no matter how old they are. I mean, how do we combat what they're learning in school with a school system that's now teaching them, you know, do whatever you want that makes you feel good. And essentially they're indoctrinating our children with false teachings that they're free to love whomever, whatever they want, whenever they want. So how do we fight that?
Yeah, they're not only saying that, they're also saying, so anyone who has the opposite opinion, which in other words, a traditional Christian or a Catholic opinion, is mean, bigoted, terrible, hater. So it's not just that they're introducing a new idea. They're also saying any old idea now is evil. So what we have to do, and this is not going to be comfortable, and it's what a lot of adults don't want to do, so we can imagine why our kids don't want to do it either, is we have to be willing to be socially shamed or socially shunned in our beliefs. And nobody really wants to do that because we want to, by nature, again, by fallen nature, we want everybody to like us. You know, we want to be loved and respected. And so the last thing we want is for our neighbors to look down on us or think that we're mean. But we have to start exercising our virtue, you know, our virtue of courage, and be able to say, you know what, I love you, I love, you know, our neighbor, I love everyone, but I can't go along with the idea that, you know, and then you explain why we believe what we believe. And we have to be courageous. We can't shrink from that, because then you can't expect your own kids, once they hit high school or junior high, you can't expect them to stand up to an unpopular opinion. They'll just go along with peer pressure too. And I don't think we've ever in history thought that it was okay to just let kids go along with whatever the peer pressure of the day is. But for some reason, we're all doing it now. And we need to put a stop to that. We need to be brave enough and bold enough to stand for what we believe, because, number one, because Christ expects that of us. That's what he's asking of us. And number two, because we're in charge of the formation of our children, and we'll be accountable for how we form them and what example we show. So it is difficult, but Christianity wasn't supposed to be easy, and I think we've been lulled into this idea that, well, it was always just supposed to be okay to be Christian in America. Well, not really anymore. We have to get used to that idea.
Right. You know, I got to give a shout out here to Joseph Ciambra, who posted the other day on Facebook, and this was awesome. This is what he said, quote, "The difference between a Catholic with same-sex attraction and a so-called LGBT Catholic, the latter usually makes several demands, a rainbow flag in the vestibule, a special pride mass, and a revision of the catechism. Those of us trying to deal with our disordered desires We just get in the line for the confessional along with everyone else. End quote.
Brilliant. Brilliant. I just consider him a modern day saint. I mean, he's a friend of mine and I quote him in the book, but he is amazing. And that's exactly right. What do we do as Christians with sin? We humbly ask God's forgiveness and we go to confession. And so anybody who's trying to say otherwise or to change it into being something, a matter of pride or a matter of, the church has to change, the teachings of Christ have to change, God's moral law has to change. No. That's a snare. That's a snare of the evil one. So we don't want our children caught in the snare. We don't want to get caught in the snare. Joseph is brave. He said something true, and we need to follow his lead. And more of us need to be doing that, and then we can get our bearings again and do what we're called to do, even in a culture that hates us. It's okay. You know, Christ never promised that the world was going to love us, quite the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to stop getting along with the world when it comes to issues that can't be compromised on.
Right. You know, and another one is the arguments get pushed back on us, and you kind of alluded to this a little bit ago, Layla, is the one you cover is gay marriage doesn't affect you argument, which is pretty much what is used for anything you oppose. Well, it ain't affecting you, don't worry about it. So, you know, clearly it does affect everyone. It mm-hmm. affects our society as a whole. How do we go about pushing against that argument?
So the argument, yeah, it's really difficult because, it's just reflexively believed and it's just simply not true. So you have to say, and I've never gotten a good answer to this, Pete, I'm telling you. I've asked people who've wanted to debate me on this issue, how does gay marriage, and I always say, okay, can you define marriage? Because that's what we're fighting over, right? Like who's going to be able to get married and what, can you define marriage? And I have yet to hear anyone give me a definition. First, they always say, well, it doesn't matter what give me your definition of marriage. Words mean something. Well, it's a contract between two people to have a commitment to each other. I said, okay, great, a commitment to each other. Well, that's me and my gardener. We have a legal contract. You know, we're committed. That could be a little league contract. I mean, it could be anything. It could be any association of anyone. Or if they talk about two people who love each other, okay, well, lots of people love each other that don't get married or shouldn't get married or can't get married. I'm not going to marry my child and you're not going to marry your sister and we're not going to marry our, grandpa or whatever. You don't marry all your best friends and they can't define words anymore. So we're getting to the point where we have to go back and define words. And then, as far as not affecting us. Well, if we can't even define the word marriage anymore, which everybody knew kind of is foundational, again, to this first cell of society that, good, strong marriages, good, strong families, that's what we need for a good, strong society. If we can't even define what it means anymore, then it means nothing. And if it means nothing, then marriage meaning nothing is going to affect society. Seeing how it's the foundation, families are the foundation of society, it's got to affect us all. And that doesn't even get into the idea that now Christians can't even live their faith freely without getting fined or the threat of losing their livelihood, the bakers, anyone involved in a wedding business. You have to go along with this. Anyone who wants to use certain pronouns or not, use legitimate pronouns versus made-up pronouns, they're forcing your speech now, or they're saying that you can't you'll get fined in certain cities for using the wrong pronoun. So it is affecting everyone. People are mandated to think and act a certain way that we've never seen before. And so there is a lot of effect that's happening, and it's affecting the children too. If you have people who are now saying, well, you Christians, we're not going to let you adopt children because you'll impose your hateful views on them, which I know is happening in England and is starting to happen here, but we want to make sure that this infant child goes to a great gay couple, isn't this wonderful, we're so enlightened. Well, suddenly that child's right to a mother and a father has been taken away. So there's all sorts of implications that nobody's thinking about, but they're all there and they're getting kind of scary, frankly.
For sure. We're going to take another quick break. We have a lot more to cover. But before we go to that break, I want to mention that Ignatius Press just launched Ignatius Book Club for Schools. It's the first national book club for Catholic schools. They've partnered with a number of leading publishers out there. And the intent of the program is to bring wholesome books into schools that help form kids in their mind, body, and spirit. So if you want to find out more, visit ignatiusbookclub.com/podcast. And we'll be right back.
We want to help others, especially in places of strife, such as the Holy Land, where Christianity is dwindling by the day. But how to help? Here's an easy way: buying products through the Holy Land gift shop. Every product you purchase at myfranciscan.org/shop helps Christians support their families and stay in the Holy Land. Olive wood, embroidery, spices, and many more authentic products from the Holy Land are available right now at myfranciscan.org/shop. The Holy Land gift shop, bringing the Holy Land home.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. Today we're spending with Layla Miller talking about her book she co-authored with Trent Horn, Made This Way: How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues. And Layla, you cover a ton of ground in the 10 chapters of this book. And another topic I'd like to discuss is divorce. And particularly, I'd like to focus on how to explain this to kids of all ages, because no matter the age of the child, when mom and dad divorce, it's a very traumatic experience.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and so coming off of, you know, it's one, divorce is one of those topics that we don't want to talk about because of how many Catholics are divorced, and so we never want to hurt anybody's feelings, mm-hmm. but it really is a very serious thing, and it is a sin. And we have to talk about it because Jesus said no divorce. So when I did my previous book, Primal Loss, I'm not a child of divorce. I'm not divorced myself. I don't have any real contact with, you know, divorce. But on a whim, I put together this book asking adult children of divorce certain questions. And the answers that came back from 70, it ended up being 70 people, blew my mind. And I realized we have not really addressed this at all. And there are so many walking wounded. So, and this, again, comes down to, it's all connected with these other topics in the book. It's a misuse of human sexuality because it has to do with marriage. It has to do with the breakup of marriage. And all of that is about human sexuality. And so when a child experiences the breakup of the foundation of his or her identity, something which is a primal right that God gave to a child to be in an intact family with a mother and a father, The devastation that follows is often attributed to other things, but we need to look at the root of what's going on here. And so we really go into the idea that there is always, no matter what, even if one person usually, oftentimes there's an innocent spouse as well, you know, that didn't do anything wrong and that is the abandoned spouse. But that child, either way, is always, there's always an injustice done to the child by either one or both of the parents who divorce. So there's no getting around it. The child is always innocent. The child has never done anything that would warrant a breakup of his or her family. So we have to start talking about that, and we have to talk about it in terms of what the children go through and that it is an injustice. And they see it now around all the, you know, all their peers, even in Catholic schools, at least half of the kids now are divorced. That wasn't the case. I went to public school back in the 70s, elementary school. All the kids in my little grades had married parents, same marriage, you know, first marriages. So it's completely different now, and we have to address that elephant in the room. So talking to them about it, you know, what if their friend's parents are getting divorced or if their grandparents are divorced, you know, it's different for little than big kids, but the little kids, you know, they have to know also that this was wrong. What happened to this child was wrong. And that's the only thing that the child really needs to hear at that point, that this is an injustice. It's not how God planned it. It's not how God wanted it to be for you or for your friend who's now very, very sad and crying all the time or who has to miss school because he's going to therapy. And they can understand it. They just want the truth. I mean, a lot of times kids just want to hear the truth and not mm-hmm. some sugar-coated, oh, don't worry, love changes and it's great, it's fine. You know, that kind of brings us back to all the other stuff about love is love. No, speak the truth of what should have been, what isn't because of the fall and because of sin, and how we can be redeemed, you know, how we can make it right again, how God can make it right. So it's a subject most people, again, don't want to talk about, but it fits it fits well in the book.
You know, to build on that a little bit, in your book Primal Loss and when you're writing this, and what did you discover about annulment? Because that, obviously, it tends to rear its head depending upon what Pope Francis says or what he didn't say or what everybody thinks he said about it. So what exactly does the Church teach on annulment, and what have you discovered in your research for these two books?
So annulment, you know, just to define, you know, it means that a marriage, a true marriage, never existed, and it's supposed to be, you know, a juridical finding, like a just a like a court case. You know, okay, we've made this, and we looked at the evidence, and it looks like the things that required to be an actual marriage never occurred at the time of the vow, not later, at the time of the vow that didn't occur. Well, a couple of things. Number one, I know that the previous two popes have said that America has an issue. America has, I think Catholic World Report has a, you can Google their article called Annulment Nation. And we have, most of the annulments in the world are from America. The popes were concerned about that's a problem. Are there marriages that are not valid? Yes, of course, absolutely there are. So we have to be respectful of the tribunals. But when we look at that, we have to say, okay, still from the child's perspective, that's not going to make a difference to the child. It might make a difference. It might help the person who wants to move on to the next romance or who wants some idea or some closure about his or her own marriage that fell apart, but it's not going to help the child. That doesn't heal the child. In some cases, it makes the child more suspicious of the Church. Like, what do you mean? You know, what do you mean my parents were never married? I mean, so there's that we have to consider. But without touching on, you know, the very difficult question of the problem of too many annulments, we do have to remember that what we need to do is not to quickly assume that any bad or difficult marriage or marriage going through a trial means that it's not valid. We have a lot of lay people who aren't educated at all in these issues saying, oh, you'll probably get your annulment. You need to just go ahead. You're miserable. And then move on. It's what I call the reflexive, the moving on funnel that we put all these Catholics into. Well, you're not happy, so get divorced, get an annulment, and move on. That ends up being a disaster. We've got to be able to, you know, carry a cross, work through tough times, and not end the story in the middle. That's what I always say. Don't end the story in the middle. God has redemption at the other end if we just let him work. But we're buying into, again, this is part of the problem, we buy into this romance novel of marriage that it's supposed to be making you feel good all the time. It's supposed to fulfill you. And if it doesn't, that means it's bad or wrong or not valid. And that's simply not true. It's never been understood that way until this, again, this perverse generation where everything is based on feelings. So we really have to reorient ourselves again with that as well.
Right. You know, as you and I record this, tomorrow is midterm elections. You know, and one of the hot button topics for that is abortion, you know, and here we are, we're listening to all the press, you know, red wave, blue wave. I feel like the Kool-Aid man's about ready to burst through a sign somewhere. So let's start with a discussion about what the faith tells us about abortion.
Yes. So could you repeat that question again? What tells us about abortion?
What does the faith tell us about abortion to get a clear understanding?
Okay, yes. So abortion, yes. Never, ever, under any circumstances, can the direct killing of an innocent human being be moral. Never.
Right.
So that is one of the non-negotiables. It's non-negotiable. When you have a law of the land which has an entire class of human beings completely unprotected by the law so that they're able to be killed at will, that's unconscionable for a Catholic. I mean, it's unconscionable. It's as unconscionable as saying that, you know, black people can be owned or that they're slaves or that, you know, if we're in Germany, let's say in the 40s, you know, that Jews are not protected by law, that they are not fully human. So anything that would make or say that a human being is not fully human and therefore doesn't require or deserve the protection of the law is an evil, unjust thing. And so anyone who wants to say, well, you know, that's just one issue among many, No, that wouldn't fly with slavery. That wouldn't fly with killing, you know, with genocide of any other type based on race or ethnicity. It shouldn't fly here. But we have a lot of Catholics who are trying to make that argument that, well, you know, we need to tuck that into a bunch of other issues and no big deal, really. Mm-hmm. We don't like abortion, but no, it is the issue of life and death itself.
Right.
So it's, yeah.
And again, you know, if we have a Supreme Court that's able to change natural law with a country's law, that's problematic.
Mm-hmm. Yes. There's Martin Luther King. I always go back to this. This is how poorly educated we've been in the past couple decades, because even Martin Luther King, when he was sitting in the Birmingham jail, he wrote the letter from a Birmingham jail. He spoke specifically of natural law. He actually quoted St. Augustine and St. Thomas Aquinas in this letter. And he said, how do we know if a law is just? Well, a law is just if it squares with God's law, which is the natural law. And he uses the term. And he said, we know that laws that are unjust do not, you know, are not in harmony with God's law, with the natural law, and therefore they do not need to be obeyed, you know. So obviously Jim Crow laws or any type of segregation laws would fall under that as well. So we used to understand that that's how we made our law, that's how we governed, and now we have what's called positive law, which is basically whatever we want, whatever we decide, because it's the spirit of the age or it's just popular today, that's what's going to be law. Well, that's not based on any. It's based in nothing except feelings. Again, mm-hmm. Here we get back to feelings, which is how you have a Roe v. Wade, which was pretty much decided on the basis of not science, but philosophy of, I mean, they went way back to like the ancients. Well, people didn't know when life began. Well, we have science now. But see, they get all metaphysical on us when it's getting in the way of our sexual, you know, freedom.
Mm-hmm.
So we can see that we've just gone off the rails, and we have to base our laws in something concrete, which is truth, you know, the natural law, truth, science. What is a person? You know, human beings, go to the embryology books, go to the biology, go to those textbooks. You'll see when a human life begins. So we're completely off the rails. We're really into the feelings-based lawmaking now. And it's getting us into some really dangerous places.
For sure. We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we're going to cover three arguments that we hear supporting abortion. With that, we'll be right back.
I have a quiz for you. What is one of the greatest gifts parents can give to their children? It's something children ask for often. When this gift is received, the entire family is incredibly joyful and transformed on the special occasion of the arrival of this masterpiece. This gift calls for faith, courage, and generosity on the part of the givers. It lasts for many decades, only getting better, changing, and developing each day. This magnificent gift is unique and can never be repeated, but a similar gift can be added approximately every year. This gift can only be given by three persons agreeing and acting. Have you guessed it yet? Yes, this profound gift is that of welcoming another child. And the three persons agreeing are husband, wife, and God. I'm Jim Littleton, FormingFaithfulFamilies.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, Catholic book blogger. We've been spending the day with Layla Miller discussing her book, Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues. And we closed out last segment, Layla, talking about abortion. And in the book, you cover three arguments that we might hear in support of abortion. And I'd like to get your thoughts on what our response to those are. The first one is, if we make abortion illegal, then women will just get dangerous back alley abortions.
Mm-hmm. So, well, first of all, that's just empirically untrue, because we know that in those countries where abortion has been either completely illegal or almost completely illegal, they have lower maternal mortality rates than we do. And America, by the way, has, I think, aside from China, we have the most liberal abortion laws. Like even in Europe, which you think of as a secular kind of progressive place, most of their abortion laws will restrict abortion after the first or, you know, mid trimester, you know, first trimester or a little bit into the second trimester. But no, we have all 9 months, you know, any doctor can give the go ahead to get that done through all 9 months. So that doesn't make sense, since we would clearly see great maternal mortality rates in those countries like Ireland, which until recently had illegal abortion, and also Poland. But either way, you know, philosophically, you don't make it legal for big people to kill little people just because it's safer for big people to kill little people in a certain way. These are not logical. This doesn't follow logically.
Mm-hmm.
We don't make it. Here's a safer way to kill Jews. You know, here's a safer way to own slaves. I mean, we don't do that. So we don't do that here either.
The next one is, and I can just hear in my mind the snarky way they'd be saying this. If you're pro-life, then why aren't you a vegetarian that is against all wars?
Right, exactly. Yeah, well, I always say this too. You know what? In war, believe it or not, even in a just war, which we're allowed, because again, we're allowed self-defense. And by the way, a baby, an unborn innocent baby, can never be considered an aggressor. JP2 said that, but we know this.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing that is more weak, vulnerable, or could less defend him or herself than an unborn child, right? There's no aggression there. But let's talk war. Even in war, there is a moral law that holds, which is you may not ever directly target an innocent human being and kill them. Even in war, that's not allowed ever. So that principle, which would leave out as immoral all abortions, is also in place during war. You can't target and kill innocent human beings. You cannot target and kill. And that's something we all know in our heart. You would never target and kill an innocent human being ever. So that's just kind of silly. And then, you know, the idea that why aren't you a vegetarian, or why aren't you? Well, you know, I mean, if you want to equate vegetable life with human life, then we're in the weeds again. We're in this, mm-hmm. this kind of moral relativism where everything is this, you know, you get to decide for yourself that there's no difference between a piece of, you know, stick of celery and a boy.
Mm-hmm.
But is it a boy, is it a rat, is it a pig? And some atheists and some people do hold to that. They're like, you know, a pig who has feelings is actually more valuable than an unborn child who doesn't yet have feelings. So they would say that. But mm-hmm. then our life is, human life is worth less than an insect. And do we really want to go there?
Right, right. And then the third argument that you discuss in the book is, even if it is a baby, it's still my body, my choice, which that one drives me insane.
Yeah, that drives me crazy because I've been pregnant 8 times. I mean, I cannot even imagine saying that the child I carry within me is somehow my body. I have had, well, I've given birth to 2 girls and 6 boys. And to put it bluntly, I don't have a penis, but I had a baby inside me that did. So 6 times. So in other words, that can't be my body because I'm a woman, you know,
mm-hmm.
and that can't be my body. I don't have 8 limbs, you know, because there's a, someone's got a head in there. That's not my head. Whose head is that? You know,
uh-huh.
whose toes are those? It's so, you know, I always say little kids can see what the adults who are trying to make it okay to, you know, kill unborn people. Little kids can see, oh, there's a baby in there. Sonograms have made this very obvious. Biology makes this quite obvious. We have different DNA. We have different sex half the time. It's not your body. Once your body is not your, you know, once it's someone else's body, then what you do in killing that other body is a violation of that body.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that one drives me crazy because really, this won't be something that's going to be difficult for your small children to understand.
Right.
When you teach gently that, look, there's a baby in mommy's tummy, or there's a baby, they can see. They can
mm-hmm.
see the fetal models. They can see the ultrasound and realize that's not mommy's body. That's the body of your sibling or someone else.
Right. You know, one of the things that came up here recently on social media with which I do spend some time on due to the roles I have as a blogger and with Breadbox Media, was there's a picture posted by a couple who miscarried their child at 14 weeks. And they posted a picture of that child for a point. And the point was to combat abortion. And everybody's like, oh, how could you post that picture? Well, how? This is what's so maddening about society. They're concerned enough that that miscarried child is identified as a child in that picture. But that same child, had the parents made the choice, could have been aborted.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Yeah, and we don't want to be confronted with the truth of it. You know, it offends us to see, you know, what are you doing here? Well, we want you to see the truth. When did we start to believe that the truth shouldn't be told or shouldn't be seen? You know, this is the truth. This is a child. This is not you. This is not me. This is a separate person with its own, you know, heart, head, hands, toes, fingers, precious child, and we need to see the truth of it. It's mind-boggling to me that we are trying to obfuscate and blur all the obvious truths that we all used to understand, and we see that really in the case of all the transgender stuff now, you know, mm-hmm. which is, you know, now you can't even, the most obvious thing that we all know innately about ourselves, whether we're men or women, is now all up for grabs. It's kind of like crazy making, you know, we're all being gaslighted on some level here by the devil or someone, but people are going along with this. And the most obvious truths that never even had we didn't even talk about them because it was so obvious. Nobody, it wasn't even a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly now is the biggest, civil rights issue of our time, the biggest, most important thing that we need to understand. This is a truth that if you don't get behind it this second, you are a bigot, you know, you're a hater. It's like, wait. This is so foundational, and this is so rooted even in our own chemistry, our own biology, but you're still trying to tell me that it's not true. I mean, we're in the Twilight Zone. We're in La La Land.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we Catholics, we may be the only ones left that are grounded in the truth. So we have to be firm and confident. We have to teach this to our children because otherwise it's complete moral chaos, which is what the devil wants anyway. That's what he's aiming for.
Right, and I want to cover one more topic, and we won't have a lot of time here to do that, but that's covered anyway, and I knew going into this we wouldn't be able to cover everything, but that topic is pornography, and studies have shown it's as addictive as almost any drug out there today. What can we do to protect our kids, especially the ones that have a phone that has the potential of essentially being, as Matt Fred and I discussed a couple months ago, a 24/7 porn machine?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is such a tool of the devil. I mean, the idea that now it's just streaming live right into our homes, where before you'd have to sneak off and maybe find a magazine somewhere, you know, under an uncle's, you know, couch or something. It is, yeah, well, it is addictive. It will change your brain chemistry. It is insidious. We don't allow computers in the rooms. We don't, our computers in the main room of the house where everybody walks past all the time. We don't give our kids smartphones until they hit like senior year in high school and they've had lots of talks and chastity training before then, but we want to get them out of the house not being addicted to anything. So you're going to have to make some hard choices as parents, and you're going to have to explain that it is like a drug. I mean, I've told my kids that forever. We tell them, if you start down this path, it's going to destroy you. I mean, it will destroy, it'll be like you're a drug addict, and your brain will change, your relationships will change, the way you view women will change, or men, you know, the way that you approach marriage will change. Everything is going to go bad. You will not be a strong man. We tell that to our boys. You will not be a strong man. You will be a weak slave. If you want to be a weak slave, by all means, open that door. But I don't think you do. I think you want to be a heroic, strong man who is free. And in the book, we mentioned that, yeah, even secular guys are now coming together to kind of break that habit. And they're finding, it's on Reddit, I think, it's a whole group. They're finding that they are restored in so many ways when they give up or stop pornography, masturbation. They are finding their humanity again. And so we do need to realize it's an enslavement, and that needs to be clear. You can't toy around with that. The kids need to know that. So
right.
Yeah, we're very clear on that.
Well, Layla, that's all we have time for today, and I want to thank you for spending it with us. I want to give you an opportunity to tell people where they can find your book, Made This Way.
Sure. You could go to shop.catholic.com. That's the Catholic Answers store. And they do, for parishes and such, you can get them as cheap as $5 a copy if you buy a case of 20 together. And then also Amazon for my other two books before that. And I'm at laylamiller.net. That's where I blog now. And we just hope that everybody feels that they can find some tools in here that will give them the confidence that they need to teach their kids.
For sure.
We're all in this together.
For sure. So thanks so much for taking time out of your schedule and spending it with us. Any closing thoughts?
Just courage. I just always tell parents, be courageous. You were made to do this, and God will give you the grace to do it.
Awesome. Well, with that, you've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. And until next time, God bless.
Breadbox Media programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com.